Maybe. A while ago in the Portsmouth Daily Times, there was an article that said Prozac reigns as the top antidepressant is ending. Prozac was no longer going to be the top antidepressant. It said that for the first time in 5 years, doctors wrote more prescriptions for a new competing drug, which was Zoloft. And Zoloft was the new king of the hill for drugs. And Prozac really had been kind of the metaphor for fixing mental health problems. Everybody who needed anything, they tried Prozac for them, and it almost became like aspirin for everything else. The pills not only helped the depressed people, but became known for simply making people feel good. What better treatment for depression than making you feel good, right? So that's what they were doing. A few years ago, Brad's sister, who is a physician, a family practice physician, sent him a following media alert. Said Fox News reports on depression, in which some research have called the cancer of the 21st century. They presented their findings in the World Economic Forum, which is an interesting place to present that. And they urged businessmen and women and governments to allocate more money for research for funding. They said that over any six-month period, their research indicated that 5 to 7% of the world's population will be suffering from a serious depression. It ranked first in the list of 20th century American problems. The first is marriage, and a close second is depression. One statistic said that 20 to 30% of Americans struggle with depression. And clearly, it's probably the problem you hear people talk about most often, except it's changing a little bit. People now talk about bipolar depression followed by something else. But even most of you, in your casual experience with people, find people talk about feeling depressed and feeling blue and feeling down. There was a cover story back in 2000 in U.S. News and World Report had a picture of a teenage girl with this caption: Paxil, Prozac, Ritalin. Are these drugs safe for kids? They certainly weren't designed for kids, but they're being used for kids. Most parents are using powerful pills to control children's behavior. And the trick with depression is in adults, you'll see one set of symptoms, and in children and adolescents, you usually see the reverse. So while adults tend to be kind of withdrawn and inward focused when they're diagnosed with depression, teenagers tend to be acting out a lot of times. It's a very different picture. Our society says, in fact, that we should feel good. Matter of fact, our society demands that we should feel good. And so the question we're asking tonight is that what the Bible teaches? Are we always supposed to feel good? You want to venture an answer about that? Are we always supposed to feel good? Okay. I know we don't do a lot of audience participation here, but depression is that debilitating mood, feeling, or air of hopelessness, which becomes a person's excuse to cease from handling life. That means discouragement is not depression. Being down is not depression. Depression is kind of like being down and out, right? Everything's shot. We want to realize the importance of dealing with depression in church ministry. And it's important to do because you're going to continue to see people come to you with depression when you're doing any kind of counseling. February 14th, 2000 issue of U.S. News and World Report had an article that said the ancient roots of modern melancholy, and the subtitle was, Did Depression Help Our Ancestors Survive? A University of Michigan psychiatrist said that there are depression-like symptoms in apes and monkeys, and he suggested some of the features of the illness, such as a lack of motivation, may have actually helped our simian ancestors through tough times. So here's somebody who wants to point out how good depression is. He went on to say that these once adaptive features have passed on to us, and since we don't really need them to adapt, that they become more of a debilitating factor for us. We want to suggest in this lecture that non-biblical counselors cannot offer true hope for people with depression. And we're going to talk about why they can't. The question we're going to ask today is this a spiritual problem? Ultimately, the answer to that is yes. Depression is really not an emotional problem, but a spiritual one. Depressed person's emotions are working really quite well. Something bad's happening in their life, and they're feeling lousy about it. The problem is that the depressed person is then living by those feelings. Rather than living by what we're commanded to do, people who feel depressed and give in to those feelings start living that way. So depression is kind of a contemporary term. A century ago, people used the term melancholy. In biblical times, they just called it sloth. Right? People just weren't doing anything. One way to start to identify it is to use the personal data inventory. People will use words like moody, that they're often blue. Sometimes they'll refer to themselves as serious, shy, introverted, easygoing, quiet, self-conscious, lonely, and sensitive. And as I mentioned, some people will be seeing it differently. They will refer to themselves as nervous, impatient, impulsive, excitable, and imaginative. The biblical counselor needs to ask probing questions of the person in order to find out what's behind this. You want to find out if there's a recent loss in their life. Could be a death. Could be an athlete who has lost their ability to perform. Could be, in this day and age, unemployment. Somebody who's lost their job and doesn't see much prospect for regaining that. Or could be divorce. Sometimes people who've lost a spouse through death or divorce will also show these symptoms. The second thing you want to do is you want to look for HALO data. And their attitude will be, what's the use? They'll have an air of hopelessness about them, and they'll try and convince you that it's no use. And I can tell you, having seen people who were depressed for many, many years as a secular counselor, I will tell you, they will come in, and sometimes you scratch your head and say, why did you come in? I mean, if it's really this lost, if there's really so little hope, why would you bother even coming to see somebody? Because they could convince you that they ought to just not come. Your job is going to be way too tough. They cry easily. They sigh. They look down. Sometimes they sit motionless, just like a lump. They don't do anything. Sometimes they're unkempt in appearance. They seldom laugh. And there's kind of a physical slowdown. There are biological effects of depression. Depressed people often have a worse time in the mornings. And when you're doing counseling with them, what do you think you're going to do about that? That's right. You're going to give them homework that requires them to get out of bed and get moving. These may be people you have getting out of bed and exercising in the morning just to get them moving, to kind of break that cycle. The other thing you want to consider, complaints or core data. That's information that they give us. They're tired often. They'll tell you that they don't sleep well. Sometimes they'll tell you that they sleep all the time. They'll go to bed tired. They'll get up tired. They never have enough time to get things done. They'll complain of backaches, headaches, loss of appetite. Occasionally, maybe they'll complain of overeating. They use sleep as an escape. They use sex as an escape. They use anything that will help them escape this feeling they're having. By the way, a depressed person may not experience total immobility across the board. It may only be in one area that they shut down. And one place you'll see that is with people who are perfectionistic. Sometimes very depressed people are very perfectionistic. So because they feel so bad in most areas of their lives, they'll pick one area that they're going to do perfectly to kind of compensate for that feeling. We'll just give them a second. I was saying that some people respond to depression through perfectionistic behavior. So because they feel so overwhelmed by certain areas of their life, then they pick one area that they can do perfectly to kind of compensate for that feeling of depression in the other areas of their life. There's a slavery to habits. And one thing they like to do is they like to talk about their problems. And they like to talk about their problems. And they like to talk about their problems. But they don't like to take action. And I think you can find some references that would point these people out to in Psalm 32, 3 and 4, Psalm 38, 4 through 6, and Proverbs 14, 30. One of the things that happens to these folks who like to talk about their problems is their fatigue increases because they talk about them and worry about them. And it's kind of like a cycle that goes round and round and round. And the more they talk about it, the more they depressed they get about it. The more depressed they are, the more they feel like they have to talk about it. And this can go on and on. So when you're dealing with a person who's depressed, who's complaining about being depressed, the first thing you want to do is you don't want to start things by saying to them, "How are you doing? How are you feeling?" What do you think they're going to tell you if you ask them how they're feeling? They're going to start right back into that carousel, that cycle that they were on. So you want to ask things like, "What have you been doing today?" That'll usually be a pretty short answer because they probably haven't been doing much of anything because depressed people just don't do. So once you've identified that these folks are coming in, they're feeling, their presenting problem is depression, then you want to start separating that from the performance problems. First, you consider the presentation problem. It's their understanding of the problem that they gave you. And their example is, "I'm tired most of the time. I cry a lot. I'm nervous. I never get anything done. And my husband just doesn't understand me and he yells at me." Sometimes the information is presented as a cause of the problem. And the counselor has to be able to recognize that what these people are presenting to them is really an effect of what's going on rather than the cause. So someone might tell you they're depressed because their husband is yelling at them all the time. And it would be easy to fall right into that trap and try and figure out, you know, no wonder you feel depressed. Your husband is yelling at you all the time. When you might come, and I'm not excusing the yelling behavior, but you might come around to recognize what he's really yelling about is nothing is ever done. All you do is sit around, and when he tries to talk to you, cry, right? And so his behavior is still not appropriate, but his behavior isn't what's causing those feelings. Those feelings are what's really driving that behavior. And we would still have to work with him to change that behavior. Please don't misinterpret that. The immediate temptation is to roll up our sleeves, as any good counselor would do, and help them find immediate solutions to these problems. But although that would provide some short-term assistance to them, it really isn't going to get to the root of the problem, and it will recycle. One of the problems is we live in a society that doesn't tolerate bad feelings. And you know that if you watch television, every commercial is about how you're supposed to feel good, what you should do to feel good. One of my favorites is the rent-to-own commercials. Everybody should have good things, right? It's like there's no concept that people earn different things and do different things. Everybody should have good things. We live in a society that just doesn't allow us to feel bad. But we really ought to thank God for bad feelings. Y'all do that regularly? Thank God for bad feelings? Why would we do that? Because our feelings are really just indicators, right? They're not real, except that they're an indicator about something that's going on with us. So they're an indicator of other things in our lives that need attention. They're kind of like lights on your dashboard that go off to let you know there's a problem. If my head's hurting, the pain, I have to ask, what is the pain indicating? There's lots of possibilities. It might be a serious physical problem like a brain tumor, or it might be the result of a non-Christian-like response to stress, or it could be many other problems. The root problem isn't how I feel. It's not that I'm in pain. It's that I have a tumor. I'm not responding well to stress. I'm wearing my baseball cap too tight. I mean, there's something else that it's not the feeling that's the problem. It's whatever's causing that feeling. And that's what we want to address. A common approach today is to try to get rid of bad feelings. And we all understand that, right? We have bad feelings, we'd like to get rid of them. But if you take the approach that feelings are just an indicator of some other area in your life that needs help, then to just always try and get rid of the feelings would be like taking electrical tape and putting it over the indicator lights on your dashboard when they come on. The light would go away, but the problem would still be there. And that's what we kind of do in our society. When people have feelings that they're not comfortable with, we put black tape over it so they don't have the feeling anymore. We do that with Prozac and some of the other medications so that people feel good and don't deal with whatever is underlying that. All right, so we're going to consider the performance problem. After hearing the counselee's presentation of the problem, the counselor must sort through the information and learn about the counselee's performance. An example is someone says, I've stopped work, the ironing is undone, the dishes are in the sink, I'm not preparing meals anymore, my husband is yelling. Okay, those are performance issues. And here's some of the causes of depression. The performance might cease to be right. Feelings are consequently not right because there's problems in the home because we're not doing our chores, or there's problems at work because we're not doing our things. So one of the first tools we use with people who come in complaining about depression is that we have the people write down a schedule, everything they're going to do that day, what time they're going to get up, and every task they intend to do that day, and have them make a list, kind of a schedule in advance of the day to kind of keep them focused on moving. Remember, one of the things these folks don't want to do is they don't want to do, right?
What's number one under B?
I never do that well. Is it presentation of the problem? The counselee's presentation of the problem? I have a different outline than you do, so. It might be. You're right. I'm sorry. That would have been a good choice, huh? Sometimes I just have someone have to remind me every once in a while when I'm like four slides off to just get the slides. Three? Does that work? Okay. So that's the performance problem. And then we're going to look at the preconditioning aspect. So we want to know how far back does the problem extend? We want to know how deep are the habits? And we're not doing this, this isn't the Freudian thing where we want to go back and explore their childhood and find out if their mother treated them right and if they were mad at their father. But we do want to understand how their behavioral patterns have developed over the years. How did they handle problems in junior high? If in junior high when they had problems, they went to their room and lied down and tried to avoid the problem, that would give you some picture of how they deal with things. And most important, or maybe at least as important as us seeing those patterns, is then to help them recognize that pattern themselves, that this is the way they have dealt with things over the years. They've developed patterns. And sometimes they develop them starting with just watching their parents. How did your parents handle that? Well, there's a good chance if someone doesn't intervene somewhere along the way, we handle a lot of our problems the way our parents did. And I can only tell you how frightening that is sometimes. The first time, many of you may have had this experience, the first time you're dealing with your children and you hear your dad's voice come out of your mouth, it's like, oh, I can't believe that I said that. So a lot of what we learn from watching our parents. And people who are depressed oftentimes have those same patterns developed. So we've seen some dynamics of depression, and in the Bible you can see it with Cain. Cain went on a downward spiral in sin. And I'm assuming if you're in this class, y'all know we're in Genesis, right? Okay. He disobeyed God. How did he do that? What was Cain's problem? His sacrifice was not given in an obedient faith like Abel's was, right? And the results were God rejected his offering. And here's what happened. Here's how he responded. He got angry and depressed. It says Cain's face slumped. And oftentimes we see the anger and depression then overlapping. And we see that with our counselees too. God gave Cain the opportunity to change. And God asked him, why are you so angry? And that's oftentimes a very good question to ask people who are depressed. People who come in presenting with depression oftentimes are very, very angry. And rather than deal with that anger, they just kind of refocus all those feelings back on themselves. And sometimes they're very good at making everybody around them miserable. Sometimes they can express their anger by making everybody around them feel miserable. What counsel did God give Cain in his depressed state? He said, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. In essence, God told Cain, if you do right, you'll feel right, and he left the choice up to Cain. So what Cain did was he killed his brother. In addition to killing his brother, he lied about it. And rather than changing his actions, he took his anger out against Abel. And God judged him. God hit him where it would hurt the most. Since he wasn't offering his sacrifices in an obedient heart, God hit him where it would hurt, and that was his work in his crops. That's where he got his significance from. That's what he resisted giving up. And so that's what his punishment was. That's how he was hit. And his response was he became suicidal. He said, my punishment is more than I can bear. So what did God do? God demonstrated mercy. Now this particular story of God counseling Cain is a great story for you to all really focus on as you're here for biblical counseling, because you really want to be successful when you do this, right? You really want to have people come into the office and you want to pull out the book and you want to really help them see how that applies to their lives, and then you want them to make changes and things are going to get better. And you're going to have a tendency when that doesn't happen to wonder if it's you. And I just want to point out now, Cain had the absolute best counselor available, right? The perfect counselor who could only give the perfect counseling. But Cain didn't respond particularly well. So when you have times that your counseling doesn't work particularly well, don't always assume that it's something you're doing wrong. Because here's a great example of the perfect counselor and the perfect counseling not getting the desired result. The problem wasn't with the counsel, but the heart that refused to submit to counsel. So the depression, the lessons of depression we would get from Cain is, first of all, the depressed person is not the victim. And sometimes people, when they come in, they look pretty victim-like to you, all right? And that's just simply isn't the case. It can be the case that they are feeling depressed about having been victimized, but the depression is not a result of them being a victim. It's a result of the way they're responding to their feelings. The depressed person is a responsible person. They're responsible for how they respond to those feelings. And this is the real hope of biblical counseling for depressed people. And it is, depressed person can reverse the spiral by God's help. So let's talk about how to help the depressed person. First of all, you want to explain the dynamics and how those dynamics lead into a downward spiral. And you can certainly use Cain as an example of that. It's inappropriate behavior, followed by feelings of guilt or anger, followed by a depressed feeling, and that spirals and spirals and spirals till he said it was too much. It starts with a problem. It's followed by a sinful, wrong, or unbiblical response. And that's usually accompanied then by poor feelings, by bad feelings. This is followed usually or oftentimes by additional sinful responses. Some of those would be blame shifting, so blaming someone else for the problem. Sometimes that'll be denying responsibility, but there's usually another sinful behavior that comes in there. And of course, as y'all know, when we sin, then we feel bad. So if your pattern is that you sin and you feel bad, and then you sin because you're feeling bad, then you're going to feel bad again, right? You can see how a person would just continue to spiral downward. The sin makes us feel poorly, and that's usually because of the guilt we feel about the sin. The depressed person needs to break the downward spiral. And we have to help the depressed person see himself as a responsible person. And the way we do that is we try to get them to replace old habits, which is their preconditioned program of life. We talked about how have they done things over their whole space of life. Okay? And we want to replace them with biblical habits. It's important to get a depressed person sweating. This may be hard at first. We need to address the change of thinking first sometimes, But then we got to get the person doing. Dr. Wickert, who's a physician from Lafayette, who's also a biblical counselor and a NANC instructor, offered this perspective on identifying and dealing with depression. He said depression has two distinct aspects. Strong feeling orientation, and then the feelings become the basis for the person's action. And the difference between depression and discouragement is the immobility of it all. So lots of us feel discouraged from time to time, but then we take steps to get beyond whatever is discouraging us. People who submit to what they believe is depression have those same feelings of discouragement, and then they just decide there's nothing they can do about it. And they start to justify not doing anything about it because of the bad feeling. And of course, because they're not doing anything about it, they have more guilt and more bad feelings, so it reinforces the fact that they can't do anything about it. And it just keeps going and going. Is depression an emotional problem? And now I got to tell you, I was a secular counselor for years and years, and what we did in secular counseling was we helped people feel good. So when someone came in and felt bad, we acted like there was something wrong with feeling bad. And we tried to get that to be fixed. We didn't want them to feel bad. The reality is, when people feel bad, when people feel depressed, there's not probably an emotional problem at all. Their emotions are probably working just fine. Their emotions are supposed to be an indicator of other things going on in their lives. They're just not supposed to be the guiding factor in how you live your life. So their emotions are working fine. Usually something bad has happened, and they're feeling bad about it. It's their response to it that's sinful behavior. And so here's what you're going to convince them to do. You're going to convince them that the way they need to live, and you're going to do it biblically, you're going to convince them the way they need to live is the way God wants them to live. And you're going to convince them that, for just like every one of us, what we have to do is focus on, I want to do what God would have me do. And the trick for these folks is, regardless of how I feel. Right? So if my job is to support my family, to lead my family, and part of that is provide support, then even if I get up feeling depressed in the morning, and I can tell you stories about my job. No. You know, we all have things that make us feel out of kilter. And what you have to do is you have to say, okay, I don't feel good about that, but I still have to go accomplish what I have to accomplish because this is my job. This is my role. Or if it's someone whose job, if the woman is a housekeeper, someone who stays home, cares for the family, cares for the house, takes care of things, when she feels depressed, she can't say, well, I no longer have to do that because I feel bad. She has to say, in my role as a wife and as my role as a mother, these are my duties. And I have to do those duties whether I feel good or whether I don't feel good. Just not feeling good is not an excuse for not doing them. When a person feels poorly, we simply seek to help them feel better through the use of medications. We actually usually hurt them because the problems continue. They're feeling poorly because they are not handling life in a God-honoring way. And if we can help them avoid those feelings, then it gives them permission to go on doing things in non-God-honoring ways without dealing with what is working correctly, and that's the guilt that leads to them feeling bad. As a biblical counselor, you're going to see a lot of people who are on medication. People are going to come in, and particular people who are telling you they're depressed or bipolar, they're going to tell you they're on medication, and you're going to know that the real problem is what? The real problem is how they respond to their feelings. But unless you are the physician who prescribed that medication, you ought to not be telling them to get off the medications. Ever, ever, ever. And Dr. Hodges is going to talk about counseling people who are on, he calls them psychological medications, in a couple weeks when he's here. That's next week, isn't it? Next week Dr. Hodges comes. He's going to talk about that, but the key is, if you just continue to help people focus their behavior on biblically appropriate behavior, they will eventually figure out they don't need the medications. When they go back to their doctors and they no longer have symptoms to complain about, the doctor is not going to see a need for that medication either. So you don't have to be worried about counseling people to get off their medications. That's really the physician's job, is to prescribe or to tell them to stop taking it. You want to avoid falling into that trap. What do you do to reverse the spiral? So the first thing is, you want them doing. No matter how they feel, you want them to be up and doing. I think maybe I jumped ahead a slide or two. They don't have to feel like it. They don't have to like it. They just have to do it. So you want to keep people focused on that. You want to get others, such as neighbors, husbands, friends, to encourage them to watch, to encourage them to do things, and then to watch when they're using excuses for not doing. All right? You don't want to turn everybody into somebody who's nagging at them, but you do want people to be able to talk to them about that and be able to point out when they see things going. And this is a fairly good one. If you fall behind, allow yourselves no privileges till you get caught up. So the reason for that, of course, is privileges ought to reinforce godly behavior, not reinforce ungodly behavior. So if somebody's falling behind on what they're supposed to be doing, then you don't want to reward them for doing that by letting them do things that are privileges. Depressed people love to watch TV. It requires them not to think at all. It requires hardly any of us to think when we watch TV. And they can just sit there and kind of go into this vegetative state. And the nice thing for them is nobody even challenges them because they're just sitting there watching television. They need to find a neighbor or a friend to work with. But again, what they like to do is they like to talk about their depression. So you don't want them to find a friend or a neighbor to talk to. You want them to find a friend and neighbor to do with. That could be exercise, that could be doing volunteer work, could be anything that keeps them moving. But you don't want them to find friends to talk to, because I guarantee you what they will talk about is how depressed they feel, how bad things are. Because that's what people who are depressed talk about. That's what their focus is. Studiously avoid all daydreaming, TV watching, and self-pity parties. When you see it developing, get up and go to work. So when you're counseling someone and they say, I just find myself sitting around all day thinking, nah, thinking is not okay. Get up, get moving, get doing. Right? This will get trickier. You need to get them to address themselves to the real cause of those feelings, and then do the right thing about that. So if they're depressed because they got creditors calling every day and they don't know how they're ever going to get out from under those bills, then maybe the real solution is to do something about that. Maybe the solution is to not spend so much. Maybe the solution is to find another job. It's to do something to break that pattern. So people want to define their problem, being down and out, which we defined earlier as depression, being down and out, is a sin. It's not acceptable for a person to become self-focused and fail to love God and others by becoming totally inactive. So you're allowed to feel down, right? You're not allowed to be down and out. You're not allowed to just quit functioning because you feel down. It isn't the way to show love to God or to others. What does the Bible say to do? Remember the original cause of Cain's problem? He didn't do what God said he should do. So you help people figure that out. What is it that they're doing? They will want to know where, when, and how do I begin? You're going to have to look at what they did that began the set of feelings and then help them figure out what steps they can take to make actions around that. And how do I schedule to finish? You want people to finish tasks. Depressed people have a bad tendency to get things started. And then when they feel bad, they don't complete the task. And then when they don't complete the task, what happens? They feel bad. Right? And then when they feel bad, they go back into a deeper depression. And you can see how that's cyclical. So you want to help them learn to complete tasks. Maybe they have to set their goals smaller. Maybe they have to make sure things are attainable and then work towards that. And then with that sense of doing one thing, build them into doing something else. We want to keep them doing. So the next question is, this is how old this is. What about the so-called manic depressed person? We now just call that bipolar, right? We rarely talk about manic depression anymore. It's bipolar. It's all the rage. You probably have read it in newspaper articles, read it in magazines. I'm sure you've seen it on television shows. Bipolar is the new thing. It's a strange behavior that goes from extremes of elation to extremes of being blue. Bizarre behavior is often used to camouflage, as a camouflage, to throw others off track. I will tell you, people who complain of being bipolar almost never are going to come to you for counseling help when they're in what they consider their manic phase. Now, the families might, right? But the person who's feeling manic never comes in to ask for help because they're feeling great. They're invincible, right? They'll come when they're not feeling that way. Sinful solutions are often used by the depressed person to attempt a recovery. And sometimes those solutions are anything that will keep them from thinking about what was really going on. And we talked earlier, sometimes people use drugs. Sometimes people turn to gambling for the adrenaline rush that they get from that. People will turn to sex indiscriminate. Some people are known to shop. Anything they can do that will pull them from thinking about what's really going on. Elation as an overcorrection, a solution, and as a denial. Sometimes it's just a frantic grasping at straws, trying to find anything that will help them. And sometimes elation is one way of life, like pendulum living. I'm going to feel bad most of the time, and sometimes I'm just going to overcompensate for that and feel really good. And that kind of gives me permission to feel bad again, and then feel really good. They love the big times, but they can't handle about 99% of their life, which is the down times. Most people don't stay in that up phase for a long, long time. They stay down. How not to handle the depressed person? Number one is, do not only be supportive. That amounts to nothing more than patting and holding the hand of the depressed person. It says, in effect, that God has no answers. You got to pay attention to this next cute piece because I don't think it's in here. Let me look. Nope. So I have to read this carefully. It says, remember, biblical counselors are not parakeets like Rogerians, who repeat people's problems back to them. We are paracletes who are called to come alongside people and help them. If the patient has thoughts of hostility and guilt, the counselor is, these are things we're not going to do, right? If the patient has thoughts of hostility and guilt, the counselor is to minimize them. We are not going to minimize those feelings. Depressed person, that tells the depressed person that you can't help them, that you don't understand the depth of the problem. Biological determinism says we are determined by our genes. This is the form of fatalism, a cruel taskmaster that robs people of true hope. In essence, it gives people no hope, only the ability to try and cope with that bad hand they've been dealt, right? So if people believe that they're depressed because their mother was depressed, and their grandmother was depressed, and their father was depressed, and so it's in their genes, what hope is there for that? It makes a lot more sense to help people understand the relationship between how their parents cope with problems and how they cope with problems that learn behavior, and that you can help them learn new things following biblical models. And then you're going to teach them new ways to do things. Let me see. Both being only supportive and being minimizing their thoughts of hostility and guilt. Treat the counselee, they fail to treat the counselee as a responsible person before God, and they remove all the hope from them. I think we just said that. If they cannot, if people will understand that God commands us to do certain things. And some of those we talked about earlier, we have duties in life. And those are biblical commands to behave that way. And we all know that God doesn't demand anything of us that he doesn't give us the strength to provide. He didn't provide the strength for us to be able to do. You have any questions about depression? No, good. You now know everything. This, as complicated as it sounds, it's really very simple. People are going to feel bad at times in their lives. And people who come in complaining about depression have simply resigned. They've decided that those feelings of depression give them permission to not do the things they have to do. And that cycle just keeps repeating itself. They feel bad about not doing it. Other people complain about them not doing it. They feel bad about the complaints. So what you want to do is just keep people focused on what they need to be doing. And that's laid out pretty clearly in most of the other things you've talked about. Get them to think about what they have to do differently, and then just give them support to do that and hold them accountable for doing it. Okay. Some people, by the way, will hide. I told you depressed people like to talk about problems, like to talk about their depression. Prayer can be that too. Some people could just pray all the time about their depression, and then they don't take any time to listen and do what God's commanding them to do about that. So if they say, I pray and 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 pray, you might then give them some encouragement to listen when they're praying and then to act on what they're hearing. I think we're at break.